there's always another angle. Bob's Angle. Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
You don't even know where to sit. This is great. You want me to turn your mic on for you there?
I turn that mic on.
Anything else? Yeah, you turn that. That's good. That's not even yours. What a maroon.
Hey, I'm holding up the multi-platform universe around here.
You and I are like the only people that are working this week, apparently.
I'm working.
The hell is everybody else? Now, were you not on earlier today with...
I was helping Tim, yeah. Since, I don't know.
Tom.
Is that his name?
Ted.
The bald guy?
Sam and Ted, yeah.
Yeah, well, because Sid, I mean, he's one of these guys, he takes a vacation. I mean, he decides he has to stop working so he can eat more chips, I think is his.
I like chips.
Yeah.
What's wrong with chips?
Well, I think the premise is there's nothing he's doing on his vacation that he wouldn't do anyway.
What kind of chips is he eating?
Ketchup.
Well, I don't.
And this is secondhand information. It's hearsay.
I wouldn't do that.
But yeah, so I had to help out with that. It was a pleasure. Tim McAuliffe, good man. And then I had to go do a TV hit with Hazel.
You just did that?
I just did that. I mean,
in your t-shirt and your shorts?
Well, I had a suit on. I went in and
then you changed back into ugliness for this show.
Yeah.
This may come as a surprise to you, but you see that red light? It's on TV.
Yeah, but I'm not going to sit here in a suit. I don't want to make you look bad, Bob.
That's not possible. Trust me.
So, you know, and then I've got to go do a magazine story.
Speaking of chips, I'm not
Never
interested
ends.
In your magazine story. Speaking of chips, you know what I've discovered?
Mm-hmm.
Tostitos has come out with, like, you ever buy their salsa?
Yes.
It's like, okay. You know,
it's fine.
It's like everybody else's store-bought salsa. But you can't beat real, fresh salsa.
And salsa is not something I would have thought of as having, like, a boutique or...
Oh, no. There's salsa and then there's, you know, the can.
I'm open to that.
The jar
stuff. I want to find some.
Pace, you know, is another salsa. It's okay.
What's a good one then?
Well, Tostitos has now come out with what they call restaurant style salsa.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to a restaurant and order salsa, it tends to be a little more watery.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff in the jar is kind of like a glue. Red glue.
Because it's got to sit around longer, maybe.
I don't know. So I bought the Tostitos restaurant-style salsa. Fantastic.
You liked it.
I'm addicted. So now I have my scoopy little tortilla chips.
You bite the ones, do you get the ones that are like a little bowl?
Yeah, the little bowl ones.
Yeah.
Well, you can buy the restaurant style, but they're not really as good. Should I give a plug? I don't know whether I should give a plug. Best restaurant salsa, Lone Star.
I agree with that.
Best restaurant salsa is Lone Star.
Very good.
And the nacho chips, fantastic. They're hot. They're fresh.
Crispy.
Yeah, yeah. So, and when we go to Lone Star, we get a to-go order. We get a big-ass bag of the chips and a big bowl of the salsa.
You know what? That's smart, Bob.
To-go. And then you get home and, you know, because you filled
good,
your face.
The good times don't have to stop.
Yeah, an hour after you finished eating and, you know, you've belched a couple times and cleared out the stomach a little. You just go right back at it. You know, boom, 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 just piling them in. But I highly recommend this Tostitos restaurant style salsa.
I'm going to buy some of that.
Very nice. You know what else pisses me off?
The list is so long, Bob, I wouldn't know where to start.
Do you know how many stat holidays they have in Newfoundland? See, we're looking up. I have to work a certain number of stat holidays, and I worked yesterday, which is a stat, right?
Yeah. I worked too, Bob. Stat? Remember? I was here.
You're
I don't know if you noticed.
You're basically here all the time. Yeah. Notice? I couldn't help but notice. You didn't shut up for 2 hours.
I was on fire.
You didn't shut up for 2 hours. Nobody said anything else.
And you
else.
Thanked me for it.
No, I didn't. I was getting bored. I had a nap in the middle of the show because you know no short sentences.
I had one guy tweet me say, it's the best round table ever. Another round
well,
guy.
Well, he's sucking up.
Another
to
guy
you.
Tweet me and say, worst that's the worst round table ever.
Yeah, I'd go with the latter.
All right.
In Newfoundland, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
But yet I'm back. Strange.
13 statutory holidays. 13.
It's called Brunt.
They have St. George's Day. I don't know what it is. St. Patrick's Day in Newfoundland is a stat. That's awesome. That's great, don't you think?
The day after St. Patrick's Day should be a stat.
Should be a stat. They have something called Discovery Day.
What would that be for?
No idea.
All right.
June 24th. They just had it. It's the same day as Saint Jean Baptiste Day in Quebec.
Makes sense.
So maybe there's some connection there. They have great, and they have a civic holiday, and you know the usual. But they have extra holidays that I like.
So are you now like, is that a standard you're hoping to adopt for your own contractual?
Yes. I'm going to operate on
Newfoundland basis time
of Newfoundland holidays, like under vacation time and statutory holidays. Rogers must give me all Newfoundland statutory holidays.
Are we on the air there?
We are.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense.
I think it only makes sense. I'm working on it. It hasn't come through yet. So an interesting conversation with Ken Rosenthal. Well, some may think it's interesting. I thought it was sort of interesting.
I saw the big fancy double under, as they say in TV land.
Yeah, yeah. And he, not surprisingly, agrees with me.
Because you said something really insightful and
not necessarily
intelligent.
But we got into a conversation yesterday about whether the Blue Jays should even go after another pitcher, given not just the injury situation, but the fact that the two veteran guys, both of them are pitching.
Can we call Alvarez a veteran?
Well, he technically.
On that staff.
On that staff, yeah. He was one of the five opening day starters. That's what I meant.
Established.
Yeah. Had one good outing in his last, seven or eight. And that was his last one. And it was, you know, pretty good. I think six innings, seven hits, one earned run. You know, wasn't outrageous, but pretty good for him.
Pretty good considering his arm was falling off 4 days before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Which obviously, it would appear, helped, not hindered him. Ricky Romero goes out again last night, and he's a pitching machine.
Not good.
Like he's one of those guys that, you know, in the
beat. He's worse than a pitching machine right now, and I say that with all due respect to Ricky. He's a pitching machine who's inside his own head. Like he's...
Well, I don't know where he is, but boy, that was awful. Again. And he's been this way all year. You know, he had an 8-1 record that was a complete mirage because his ERA was crap. He hasn't pitched well all season.
Walked a ton of hitters.
Well, and he doesn't want to throw the fastball. You can either that or Aaron Sibbia doesn't want to call the fastball because they're killing this fastball. And so he throws these big looping breaking balls, which that's like BP if you wait on it, or it bounces 3 feet before home plate. It's one or the other. So anyway, so the point being, given that, if those two guys were doing what you'd hope they were doing, then the acquisition of another starter like a Hamels makes some sense. The way these guys are going right now and with the injury situation, I'm not sure it makes sense to go get another pitcher. And Rosenthal fundamentally agreed.
Yeah, I agree. I agree too. I mean, we talked about this a little bit yesterday.
We did.
The tough conversation is going to be inside that clubhouse, inside that organization. I think you can turn out to people like you and me and say, we're still in the building mode. It's not time for us to start shipping out prospects.
Well, you can't lose three starting pitchers and still be where you want to be. You can't really gauge where they are right now.
Like you don't want to give up what you'd have to, I presume, to get a really good starting pitcher to finish three games out of the wild card instead of six games out of the wild card or whatever you know what I mean? Like,
sure I do.
And then turn around and go, where's the people supposed to fill these holes that we've been talking about for all the, we sent them in that trade, remember? And yeah, that's you're in a tough spot. You're right in between a rock and a hard place right now.
Well, and the problem with a guy like, and Hamels is a bad example. I just use him because he's available. But the truth of the matter is they shouldn't go after Hamels anyway because they're renting him.
Yeah.
You know, and Phillies are going to want something. Phillies are going to break that team down, I think. Don't you think?
Well, they sent away, it certainly looks that way, which is shocking in retrospect.
Well,
but it's amazing how quick teams get old. Every team except the Yankees, it seems, gets old fast. And all of a sudden, all that money you got committed doesn't look so
good anymore.
Palatable anymore, and you got luxury tax issues coming in and all of that. So, I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. I still would be, I still will always regret the fact that they didn't spend money. They didn't add to their team by spending money in the offseason more. Like, I like the idea of building within. I like the idea of allowing these guys. And people talk about their prospects like they're loaded at AAA. I mean, they're real benefits of what Alex Anthopoulos has done the last couple of years, and it's only been a couple of years in fairness, is in single A. Like, they got guys who are probably 2 years away from the majors, and then...
They got three of them. They got three apparent studs.
At single A, though.
At single A.
So, like, if they fast track...
2 years.
They might be in the majors in 2 years, and then they're going to take their lumps as major leaguers, and all three of them aren't going to make it. That just never happens.
No.
So,
and you can't get innings out of them either. That's the other problem. Yeah, it's like Strasburg, you know, like he was on a pitch count and an innings count as a rookie. He's a baby. When you've got 19, 20, 21 year olds, you can't pitch him more than 160, 170 innings.
Certainly that's the school of thought anyway.
Right.
So it's how do you bridge the gap? Like, how do you get this organization? And, because the other side of it is there seems to be an opportunity here where
well, that's right.
Like, it's still the American League East. Like, there's still five pretty good baseball teams in this division, but there are two wild cards to be had, and they're good teams, but they're not great teams. They're not teams that are so formidable you can't imagine closing the gap. And this seems to be a year of opportunity, and yet we're scuffling.
So let me give you this. If you could deal one of those babies that's in, where are they, Lansing?
Lansing, yeah.
If you deal one of the babies plus one of your other prospects, maybe Goes, maybe Hechavarria, for a top-line pitcher, do it?
Not as a rental. If he's a guy who's got you got
that control, you can commit to.
For 2-3 years, and he's going to, then maybe, because you're going to need one of those guys anyway, and then some.
See, and the thing is, you're trying to match up your pieces, and the danger becomes, what if those guys are 4 years away? Like, we don't know what they're going to be. They look like Cy Young.
And 4 years away from what, exactly?
Yeah, right? They look like three guys that look like Cy Young. I think combined they have an ERA of like half a run or something stupid. Like, they're stupid good right now. But... the danger is, by the time they get here, all of a sudden you've got a team that might be past its prime.
Well, certainly you got a money-making player. Like, you've got your best player will be, if not, I don't know if Jose Bautista is going to be past it in 3 years.
Well, Jose Bautista is going to be, he'll be out of the picture in 4 or 5 years.
I mean, at some point, you know, unless he's going directly to the Hall of Fame, you can't expect them to
turn.
There's
going to be a diminishing return.
Home run seasons.
Exactly. There's going to be. You got to figure there's going to be a diminishing return. So now you're going to have. I mean, what are your keys? Your third baseman is going to be in his mid-20s, still be okay, but I don't know who the shortstop's going to be. Your second baseman probably will be gone. Somebody else will be playing first base, presumably. Who knows who your catcher will be? We thought it was going to be Darno. Now you don't even know. Maybe Colby Rasmus is still around and he's pushing 30, but he'll probably be playing left field and Goes will probably be center field. So Rosenthal was acknowledged this. This is probably as good an offensive team right now as there is in Major League Baseball. Right now.
Wow. The way Rasmus is hitting? Yeah.
Well, as a team, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Encarnacion.
And Davis is hitting pretty well. Rajay Davis is hitting pretty well, like in what's been a black hole forever.
Third baseman's pushing 300. Encarnacion is pushing 300.
No, it's a weird.
You know, it's a weird team to try and time things.
It's a weird team,
and that's why my inclination is: I know you don't want to give up on the kids, but there comes a point where you say, opportunity is in this window. The window isn't this big.
No.
You think it's this big. It may look like it's this big. It never is. The Phillies are the perfect example.
But the problem here, the risk, I guess, or the challenge is if you're the Yankees, so to speak, you know, they don't get maybe enough credit for developing farm systems, building from within, and they use those, but they don't sit around and wait for all those prospects to come to the major league level.
No, they use them.
They package them, they trade them. But the reason they're comfortable to do that is they know the next offseason they can go and buy what they need, right?
Right.
Whereas there's been no inclination here
to spend that money.
Like, in other words,
to fill the hole.
Those prospects are being counted on to be major leaguers.
Right.
And if you go and you deal and it doesn't work, then you got to backfill, and there's no evidence that they'll go and solve that problem with money.
See, and the mitigating part of this whole discussion is I'm not sure that right now you do it, given you've got Morrow, Drabek, and
Hutchison
all gone. And Morrow gone for, we think, another 5 or 6 weeks, and the other two are gone for the rest of the year and beyond.
And I mean,
is there any point? Is there any point in doing that? And yet, you can make a strong case for, if not this year, then next year, this core group could be good enough with enough pitching. And the problem is, this organization is going to start, if they don't do anything, if you say, okay, we're not going to do anything at the trade deadline this year, where are they in February in Dunedin?
Exactly. Well, what are they going to do?
They won't have Drabek. They may not have Hutchinson. Who knows what Morrow's going to be? Ricky Romero, maybe it's over. Maybe this is all there is.
Wow.
What about, is Alvarez, who almost strikes nobody out? Can you be great? Even 21, can you be great pitching to contact? I don't know anybody that ever has been.
Well,
so
what do you got?
Where is your pitching staff if you're looking forward to February of next year?
Well, the answer is you don't know.
It's pretty bleak.
What the problem is we could have had that conversation in February of this year with all those guys healthy, and we would have said the same thing. Well, we don't know what we're going to get out of Alvarez.
That's true.
Drew Hutchison didn't exist, and Drabek was an unknown.
Yeah.
And yet, until all those guys got hurt, that was the strength of this team, the starting pitching. So it's just such a I don't envy the job, you know. It's not easy, and the solution most of the time, unfortunately, is either continued patience or break out your wallet.
Yeah, and as you said, there's no inclination right now to break out the wallet, which means raises for all of us here.
That's how it works, right? Ticket prices get cheaper, and we get more money. Excellent.
We're going to bring Brian Burke on in just a couple seconds, but what do you make of this offer sheet the Raptors made to Landry Fields? Pretty interesting move.
Yeah, I think pretty bold. It's
a guy who probably won't get off the bench.
Landry Fields? No, he's
not going to play much.
He could start.
No, he's not going to start. Didn't get him to start.
He could start.
No way.
If you're paying him $6 million, he better start.
No, you're paying him $6 million so that the New York Knicks can't go and make a serious offer to Nash.
Well, because he would be the centerpiece of a sign and trade going to Phoenix, right? Mm-hmm. Although, I mean, on the other radio show I was on not that long ago, we talked to Howard Beck, the beat writer for the New York Times, and he thought it was almost a bit of overkill, and that he never really thought that a sign and trade as advertised was really in the works with Phoenix. Like, it was discussed, but it wasn't a reality, and this might be just a case of,
well, we should explain.
I mean, if the only reason they're throwing the money at this guy is to make sure that trade never happens, then it's might be overreaching. Landry Fields is a pretty interesting player, and I tell you who he'd play great with, it'd be Steve Nash. Very, very smart basketball player, very good ball handler, good passer. He's got some assets. I don't know if he's a $6 million player.
Nah, he's not.
He's not a stiff.
Wow. I guess. I mean, Calderon's going to go. You need another guard, right? If you bring Nash.
Yeah, and presumably he could play a bit of small forward for you.
Can't score enough to play small forward, can we?
Well, we don't know. I mean, he was one of these guys when Carmelo Anthony got hurt. He had a great start to his career 2 years ago playing for Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah, but that's the somebody's got to score problem. That's the problem you get in there.
But people, when Carmelo Anthony was hurt and the Knicks were rolling, when sanity was at its peak, he was really good.
For about 3 weeks.
Yeah, and then Carmelo Anthony comes back and the ball stops and what he does well is...
Yeah, there's a real danger there. I talk about it a lot. You know, in the NBA, the problem is when key guys get hurt, somebody has to score.
Yeah.
And that always makes those guys look like they're really better than they are. It's a real fool's game to try and evaluate players when a key piece of the puzzle is not there anymore. It's like you take Chris Bosch away and Andrea Bargnani's points per game go up by 3 or 4 points per game and you go, oh, Andrea Bargnani's suddenly discovered it. Well, no, he's now getting the looks and the shots that Chris Bosch would have got. And just by osmosis, somebody's going to get more shots and therefore going to score more points. And it happens to be Andrea. It doesn't mean he's a better basketball player, which is another subject altogether.
We don't want to burn an hour on that, do we?
I don't think we could. When we come back, the Leafs have been pretty quiet. And we'll find out why, if there's, is there more to come? Is the managing general satisfied with this group that finished well out of the playoffs? What about his goaltending situation? Was he interested in Brodeur? Brian Burke is next. We'll ask the questions. We'll see if we get any answers when Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Set your clock radio. It's Brady and Lang in the morning. Tomorrow starting at 5:30 a.m. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Past the hour, Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet. Bob McCowan and Michael Grange, which is sort of redundant because he's here all the time. Later, Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, Bill Paul, the tournament director for the Canadian Open, who will be in studio, and Jack Armstrong, NBA analyst. We'll talk a little bit more about this Landry Fields offer sheet and Steve Nash and the possibilities or probabilities of that happening. It's fair to say that the managing general of the Toronto Maple Leafs has been pretty quiet at this opening of free agency. That has not always been the case, as documented by the moves that he has made at this time of the year in the past. Colby Armstrong, Francois Beauchemin, Mike Komisarek, Tim Connolly, all moves made around this time. So is there a philosophical change here? Here's the president and GM of the Maple Leafs. Here's Brian Burke. Hello, Burke. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. So, have you made a philosophical change?
No. I didn't like the prices, and I've seldom added more. I think the most I've ever added is two guys. Typically try to add one, maybe two. A number of years where I did nothing in other markets. I didn't like the price tag on some of these guys, and I didn't like the term.
Okay, so when you talk about adding one or maybe two, does Jay McClement fit as an add?
Yes.
With due respect? Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me what he brings to the team.
Third line center, a guy that can play the last minute of every period, good on the penalty kill, good on faceoffs, good defensively, and a two-way player.
Is your primary need, have you established your primary need?
I think the experts would say our primary need is a net. And again, that's something we have not been able to address at a price that makes sense.
Well, I want to get to that, but you said the experts would say that. Would you, though, Brian?
I would say that we have a positional need at center.
Yes.
In terms of size, or we need increased production from the guys we have, like if Timmy Connolly can come back and have a better year.
Yep.
But it's a small group, and so we're looking there. We're looking at net if we can upgrade at a reasonable price, and that hasn't materialized yet. I don't need a goaltender until we start playing.
A goaltender down in New Jersey re-signed yesterday, I guess it was. Did you sniff around there?
It's tampering for us to talk about a player who's under contract elsewhere. I think it's safe to say, though, that there was considerable interest in this player. I felt all along he was going back, and that's what I said 2 days ago. So,
Were you puzzled when he hired an agent, as I was last week? I thought that signaled at least his intent to pursue other options.
Well, I haven't talked to Lou about it. The story that surfaced around it was that ownership issues were involved in some way, and that was holding up a deal with New Jersey, and that's why I hired an agent. He's known Pat Persson for a long time. I wasn't particularly surprised by that. I wasn't fooled by that. I still thought he was going to end up in New Jersey.
You did, huh?
Brian, cool. On the goaltending front, the premise is the expectations that you'd go out and get an established veteran to be your starter. In lieu of that, is plan B to get an established veteran who can be a reliable backup and then hope, I mean, you've added young depth at that position and hope one of those guys can seize it?
Well, I think the first choice would be, and again, it's not new. It's not something that we didn't look hard at the deadline as far as adding a guy at a sensible price to do the former, you know, to bring in a veteran who can play and let the young guys come along at their own pace rather than a baptism of fire. And something we tried hard at the deadline to do that. We weren't able to do it. And you can get a goalie. I mean, we could get it. We could have met the price on a certain goalie that's out there already. And people would say, what were they thinking? So to me, I'm not going to strip mine. We have carefully built up depth at every position in the organization. I'm not strip mine on that just to fill one hole.
Well, and you can't be specific, so let's be general. One of the goaltenders that might be available, we've had conversations off the air about that goaltender. I wasn't so sure that you were sold on that guy. I wasn't so sure you were sold on the possibilities of making that acquisition.
Well, there are issues with all the goaltenders that would be available are available for a reason. Some of them, it might be the contract might be the issue. Some, it might be their ability. You know, maybe they've, you know, fared well in a real strong defensive system.
Yeah.
That hides some of their weaknesses. But that's as specific as I'll be.
And I understand, and I think fans have to understand that, you know, it's essentially tampering to talk about players that are under contract.
It's not essentially tampering. It is tampering.
It is tampering. So, and again, without being specific so that you can comment, let's say there's another organization that has a proven goaltender and their backup is a young goaltender and they might be willing to move that young goaltender, but that goaltender is principally unproven, highly thought of, but principally unproven. Does that make any sense for you, or are you reluctant to do that given that you have a whole bunch of young guys that are, for the most part, unproven already?
Yeah, we're not looking at that avenue. The couple goalies that moved are just what you said, young, unproven guys. That's not an avenue that we're interested in. It's certainly, we've kicked the tires, looked at all the prices, but that's not an avenue we're looking at.
So how do you feel about the chances of going to camp in a couple of months with the roster that exists right now? Is that a real possibility, or are you confident something else is going to happen here?
No, I'm not. I would say that's not a real possibility at all. It's very remote. We need to do some more work. This is not, you know, the end of the season. We had the draft. We're really happy with the way that went. We acquired James Van Riemsdyk. Really happy with that acquisition, but we're not done. July 1st, to me, I've said this before. It sounds like a familiar refrain and a rant, but our group, and I include myself, I've made numerous mistakes on July 1st, too. So this isn't a rock at everybody. It's not a rock at all the other GMs. It's a rock at the group. We make more mistakes on July 1st than we make the whole rest of the year put together. And the money that was handed out and the term that was handed out just didn't make any sense to me at all. And so we stayed on the sidelines other than Jay McClement, which we were happy to add him. Last year, Tim Connelly, again, most of those guys got 4-year deals. Tim got a 2-year deal. So to me, we've insisted on our price being met, but I think he's a valuable addition. But some of the other things, you know, I'm just shaking my head. And people say, well, it's just because you lost out. We've got cap space. We have money to spend. It's not a case of losing out. It's a case of saying, I don't think there's value there.
But you've also been quoted as saying that the stupid deals are, and the ones that you will not get caught in, are the ones that have extraordinary term.
Extraordinary term with you know, it's very important that people understand this, Bob. I'm glad you asked that question. I don't object to long term. I won't do 10-year deals. I think they put all the risk of injury on the team.
Sure.
I think they totally disincentivize the player. I think they're insane. So that's my objection to 10-year deals. But that players that, or teams that want to do it, that's fine. My objection is to the deals where the last 3 or 4 years or 2 or 3 years are at artificially low numbers to drive the cap hit down.
Mm-hmm.
That's my beef. And in my mind, I've said this publicly, I testified for the National Hockey League at the Kovalchuk arbitration. In my mind, that's where we draw the line as an organization, that we're not going to do a deal that artificially lowers the cap hit by tacking on years where it's expected the player is not going to play. So that's my objection to those. So let's say I want to sign Bob McCown, and me and the agent agree, well, 6 years at $6 million is fair. The agent says, let's do this. Let's do $5 million to sign, and then let's do, we'll rig it, or $6 million to sign to make the math easy. So instead of 6 years at six, it's $6 million to sign and 6 years at a salary of $5 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Cap hits $6 million a year. The agent says, well, we can make it cap friendly if we tack on 3 years at the end at 2.5, 2.5, 2.5, and you can buy those years out, or the player, he's not going to ride the bus for 2.5 after he's banked $36 million.
Yeah.
And that drives the cap hit down, and that's what we won't do here. I've never done one. I'm not starting now. I expect all these issues will be addressed in the new collective bargaining.
And that was my next question, the obvious next question. Do you have any level of confidence? Because, I mean, you're inside the room. I mean, that this will be a priority item when...
I believe it will.
You will.
I believe that from the get-go. And that's, I'm not going to, you know, the last summer before we go into that bargaining phase, you know, it's up to the league what the new agreement looks like. But that last summer, I'm not going to change the rules.
Brian, and on that theme, you've always talked about these terms on points of principle, but do you think tactically you're in, it's going to somehow benefit you down the road because you're not committed to these extraordinary terms? You don't have bad contracts, so to speak, on the book?
Well, I think there's a mentality. When you're running a team, there's a mentality sometimes to say that that's going to be someone else's problem. You know, if we do a 7-year deal and the sixth year it's a bad contract, that's probably someone else's problem. You know, the general manager's tenure generally doesn't match those contracts. So it's probably someone else's issue. I think there's a possibility if you look at it, first off, if it's a 10-year deal and a player gets injured, you can cover some of your players with long-term insurance. My fear is that if a couple of those claims get paid on a guy with 10 years left, we're not going to be able to get any insurance. You know, at some point, insurance companies don't make money and don't turn profits by paying claims time and time again. First time they pay a claim like that, they're probably going to say, hey, the premiums are going to double or triple, or we're not going to do that business at all. So that's one issue. So even if you can insure the guy, that doesn't mean that it's healthy for the industry long term to have those guys insured. There are exclusions in a lot of those policies. So they say, well, we'll insure Bob McCown, but we're excluding his right knee because he had surgery on it 2 years ago, and we're excluding his left shoulder because he's got a history of shoulder issues. So now you got to pray if the guy gets hurt, it's the other shoulder or the other knee. So that's my objection to them. And then, like I say, if they're designed to circumvent the salary cap is a system that was designed to build in competitive balance and parity. I don't want to be part of cheating that.
How much different is this team going to look with Randy Carlyle coaching? And is that, how much is that going to come because of personnel changes we've yet to see? Or just him himself having that training camp?
Well, I think, you know, like, again, the whole situation with the coach, no one was complaining about our coach on February 6th when things were going well and everything was going our way. We were in the playoff spot. Everyone was happy. We made a coaching change. Now, the philosophy and the style of play are different. Randy emphasizes puck pursuit, aggressive forechecking, and more layering in the defensive zone. Less run and gun, perhaps, but not a trap, not a defensive system. And he likes a more physical game. So that's, you know, one thing we need to do is get bigger. James Van Riemsdyk makes us bigger, but he's not a physical guy. He's not a black and blue guy. He's just a big guy with skill. So the group gets bigger, but we need to get some sandpaper in there as well.
I've got 60 seconds. Obviously, you can't be specific, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, is there a goaltender, a frontline, first-line center out there, or a couple of them that you have a shot at?
We believe we can upgrade at those positions, yes. To answer your question, the answer is yes.
And Is it possible even to be in substantive conversations with almost anybody right now? Or do we have to get through this free agent thing over the next few days, a week?
No, it's funny. I had to get off a call. Another GM called me right before you
really,
guys called,
huh?
And I was looking at the clock.
But is that unusual?
With that team, but no, there's lots of chatter going on.
Really, huh? I mean, yeah. Is that unusual, or does that often happen at this time of year?
No, a bunch of teams that locked up money on July 1st are anxiously calling teams that didn't.
Interesting. So you're in a somewhat unique situation, perhaps.
Well, and we'll see. We'll see. I'll thump my chest a little bit if I can make some deals. Right now, it's been kind of a drought.
Yeah. Well, you know, Leaf Nation, as they like to call them, are anxiously awaiting the next shoe.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Burke.
Thanks. See you guys.
See you soon.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Burke, the president and managing general of the Toronto Maple Leafs, not giving away too many secrets. But at least there's some level of optimism that the two positions that he feels are most important, and everybody seems to agree, you know, maybe there's still something you can do.
Yeah, I don't
know. It isn't going to be Parise. It's not going to be Brodeur, but...
I don't know if he had anything to say. Exactly.
Well, he can say. Yeah. I can tell you this much. I'd be really surprised if there's a Luongo deal to Toronto. I'd be shocked if there's a Luongo
deal
to Toronto.
Well, it'd be the height of irony that they go out of their way to make a trade using prospects, presumably, to get a guy on a 12-year deal.
Well,
exactly the kind of deals
he doesn't like. Yeah. Back with more. Primetime will continue on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Blue Jays versus Royals. Pregame with Mike Wilner. Tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Talking to a general manager, an NHL general manager specifically, at this time of year, gives me a headache. it's one of those things, and with no disrespect to Brian, because Brian, I think he's trying to be as forthright as he can be. But the truth is, you can't talk about players. You can't talk. We want them to talk about individuals. We want them to talk about specific players. But he can't. I can't ask a question. You and I can't ask a question about Parise. We can't ask a question even about Brodeur.
I think you can talk about Parise. Parise is a free agent. He's not under contract right now. Same with Ryan Suter.
Yeah, I guess.
But they aren't relevant because they're...
Well, he can't talk about Brodeur because...
Brodeur
is now under contract.
He's briefly not under contract and now is.
Now is under contract. But he can't even identify whether he went after him or made an offer to him. And then we're trying to figure out, you know, look, I was talking about, you know, young goaltenders who's available, and would you go after a young, unproven goaltender, given you got a whole stable of them here? And I mean, I'm talking about Bernier, who most people think might be available.
Oh, he'll be available. Just the price.
Well, yeah. But that doesn't make any sense for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, he's a guy who's played, I think, less as a starter than James Reimer.
Yeah. Now, he might be a better goaltender than James Reimer, but you don't know.
Pedigree.
And if you're going to go after another goaltender, which he seems committed to, the answer really is get a vet and find out what you've got in Scrivens and Reimer and...
Well, we were saying a little bit off
whoever here, else they've got.
And I think that, to me anyway, the problem the Leafs have and the problem Brian Burke is in is he's burned 4 years of capital, so to speak. He had 4 years to kind of get this thing rolling, and it should be cresting about now. It's not by any measure. And so now it feels like you're kind of band-aiding. You feel like you're trying to make moves to get in the playoffs, to justify what's come before. And reality, if I'm looking at it rationally, I'd say, you know what? Get a vet, get a backup, get a guy who can come and play 30 games if you need him to. Let Scrivens and Reimer fight it out in training camp. Pick one.
If it doesn't work, you go with the other one.
Give them the net. Because I think that was a big problem last year. You had two young guys trying to do the same thing. Give the net to Reimer. Give him 40 games. If he can't pull his freight, give it to Scrivens.
Oh, I think
just roll with that.
I don't think you can give him 40 games. I think that's the dilemma that you have.
Like, well, fine. Then you find out. And the best case scenario.
I give him 5 games.
Whatever the net. But my point is the best case scenario is if those guys can do the job, then you've got assets in your organization and your team should be okay.
Can Eddie Belfour still play?
If they can't do the job, then you're not a playoff team. You're drafting higher. You haven't stripped your system to go and get a veteran who in turn is blocking guys.
Right.
Young goaltending is supposed to be organizational strength here. You can't block them.
See, that's why I thought Brodeur I thought of Belfour because Belfour was like Brodeur. I don't know if he was close to the same age.
Yeah.
Probably 37 when they got him, 36, 37. And most people thought he was done.
He had a great 3 years. Fell apart during the lockout, and they signed him again. That was sort of the problem there.
That's
why there was some discussion.
That's why I would have gone to get Brodeur.
Like Tim Thomas, you want to hold your nose? That would be a great.
All right, Tim Thomas might not play next year.
In theory, who knows what Tim Thomas is going to do? Tim Thomas doesn't know what Tim Thomas is going to do, but
tomorrow.
It's the same premise, right? There's an older guy who's not going to do the job for now.
And you don't care whether he's 38. You hope he's got a year or two left. And then in the process, you find out what you've got as far as a kid's concerned. The dilemma is you can't really go on this long-term building program because the clock is now ticking for Brian Burke, and he knows it. We'll take the break. When we come back, the national radio stations and the friends at Sirius will all join us, along with Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, Bill Paul of the RCGA, Jack Armstrong, too. It's primetime.